Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. CPA Trendlines presents a production of the Center for Accounting Transformation.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Transformation Talks. I'm your host, Bill Penzack, and I'm the Chief Transformation Officer for the Center for Accounting Transformation. And on this series, we talk to firms and people in the accounting profession that are going through either a personal or a firm or a life-changing transformation in general. And my guest today is Paul Mueller, who Paul and I happened to work together years ago. We stayed in contact over the years. It's been how many years, Paul?
Oh, my gosh, Bill, you're going to age me before people figure it out.
Me too. Like, it's probably been 10 years or at least or so ago.
You know what? Seems like it's gone just like that.
It has gone like that. And I still didn't have all my hair back then. And you look pretty much the same. Anyway, Paul, tell us about your firm and then give us the backstory of how you went from being the national head of the tax group for a pretty large firm to what you're doing today.
Well, people would probably think I need my head examined, but I tried that one time and they didn't find anything in there. So I am where I am. I'm the managing director for the firm of Mueller Pye & Associates. We're a full service accounting firm strictly focused on serving the needs of business clients. Of course, we do a lot of 1040 returns because every business is owned by somebody, but our real focus is on tax accounting and advisory services for the business, small and medium-sized businesses. We've been in business. We founded the firm on Halloween Day of 2008, and it's been all treats, very few tricks ever since. Pye is Robin Pye, my partner, since January 1 of 2017, who runs our practice in Katy, Texas, which is a suburb, as you know, just west of Houston, Texas. We hope to hit maybe $2 million in fees this year outside of some of the special project fees we've earned from all the COVID work. So we've been on a really good growth trajectory the whole 13 plus years that we've been running the firm.
So talk a little bit more about that, the leap of faith and leap of everything that you made from a longtime career with UHY to doing what you're doing now. I mean, that had to be, and by the way, you did that when you were in your 50s, right? So you could have smelled the barn and just kind of let things progress as they might. What possessed you to do that? And as you look at that now, do you wonder why you didn't do it sooner?
You know, essentially you use the word leap, and I'm going to come around to that in just a little bit. I joined the firm in 1983, and I think I was probably the 20th employee at the time. So we were a very small firm in Houston, Texas. As you know, at our zenith in 2006, I believe, I think we had about 600 people in our Houston office. So, you know, it was a tremendous experience of growth and managing growth, being a part of a movement to really propel that firm. But in the early 2000s, I began to feel like we were letting some of our culture erode that got us where we needed to be. Just felt like that maybe myself and the firm were on maybe divergent tracks. And, you know, when that happens, something has to change. You either change the situation by changing where you're at, or you change the situation by doing something else. And it was about 2004, 2005, somebody, I don't know, it might have been you, Bill, but somebody mentioned this book, The Radical Leap by Steve Farber. You know, it's a quick read. It takes maybe about 2 to 3 hours to read it. It's written kind of as a like a fable. So you're reading a story. It's not a how-to book. You're basically reading a story, and it's up to you to sort of glean your own impressions from it. And LEAP is an acronym. It stands for love, energy, audacity, and proof. But what it, for me, what it did, it set up three questions. that I felt like I needed to answer. And I think anybody that reads the book will pretty readily understand there's three questions you have to answer. The first question is, do you really love what you're doing? Number two is, do you love working with clients who love what you do for them? And then number three, do you love where you're doing it? And after reading that book and a lot of reflection, I realized I could easily answer questions one and two. Yes, I absolutely love this public accounting. I love this business. It's a dynamic, innovative platform for creativity. Number two, I just love working with business owners. I like working, we specialize in the construction industry. I'm dangerous with a hammer, man, but I respect people that can run construction businesses, that get their hands dirty, that actually create things and build things. I just have a lot of respect for people in that area. But when I got to the third question, do I love where I'm at? In all honesty, I wasn't. I, like I said, I think we were on divergent paths, and the book just really made me zero in on that. So again, it's one of those things that it was up to me to make a change in that situation. My wife and I had bought a home in Estes Park, Colorado, to use for vacations, holidays, those kinds of trips. And we just decided that it was time to make a leap. And so, your word leap is perfect. It was time for us to make a leap and for us to do our own thing. And notions I had about client service, fees, how you groom, treat, develop employees, that it was time for me to put those practices into place and see if they play out.
So is it easier now that you've got a smaller infrastructure to deal with? So the passions that you have for working hand in hand with clients, or bring your people, or all the things that we talk about from an aspirational standpoint, is it easier to do it in a smaller organization?
It's easier to do it, and you're totally accountable for your successes, and you're totally accountable for your failures. So in some cases, it's like a lab. If things are going to work pretty quickly or not. You're going to know if a product you're trying to promote to your clients, if you're going to gain traction on it pretty quick. If you have a developmental program with your staff and it's not working, well, you know it pretty fast. And so, you need to fix it. So things happen a lot faster, in a smaller environment, and you get, instant feedback on what it is you're trying to do.
So do you feel like there's a greater level of accountability because there's no place to hide?
Oh, absolutely.
For you and for everybody, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, working with business clients, I guess working with any kind of clients, but business clients in particular, you got to bring your A game every day. You just can't drop the ball. So it holds your feet to the fire and really, up your game and be on it every day. And that's a great place to be in rather than just gliding.
So the decision that you made to move full time to Estes, wasn't that hard to do in your 50s? I mean, you had gotten the brass ring. You had a lot of respect across the firm for me and a lot of other people. And it was somewhat shocking, from being one of the people left behind. It's like, oh my God, he's going to do all of this. What kind of conversation did you have in your own mind about, my gosh, I'm 50, I'm in my 50s. I can just ride this sucker out.
Well, Teresa, my wife, we're coming up on 45 years of marriage. Teresa's my best friend, mentor, counselor, partner in life. And so the two of us really had some deep conversations, and she was totally supportive of what I was going through. She's probably the one to ask the really hard questions of what's this going to look like on Monday morning? It's one thing to talk about it over a glass of wine on Friday, but what's it going to look like on Monday morning? I really had to be accountable to her first for that. But in some respects, Bill, I think it was easier. Our kids were up and out of college. They were on their own. So we weren't disrupting lives, girlfriends, school relations. We didn't have any of that blocking us. We both kind of laughed that, you know, if this didn't work out, we could both go sack groceries at Safeway. There's a Safeway store in Estes Park. Worst case scenario, we just go sack groceries. So once you understand the worst case scenario, it makes it pretty easy to go, because you know if you can survive that, something better is going to happen. The other part of it that I think I came to realize by reading The Radical Leap was I think it was harder to stay. I think it was actually easier to make the leap and start over in a totally different situation than to be that proverbial frog in the pot, that you may not be happy, but you're comfortable. That may be the riskiest thing of all is to maintain the status quo.
Yeah, because you had that vision or that dream of doing something else, and it would probably, I know it would me, it would kind of gnaw at me. It's like, oh my God, I've got another path forward that's different and maybe scary, but nonetheless, it's an opportunity or possibility. And it would be worse maybe to have had that insight and then not be able to have it come to fruition. That would be worse.
Yeah, when I look back on it now, because I've had other people ask, you know, why did I make a change like that? And the firm was very profitable. The partner, as partners, we were all making a pretty good living. But after a while, you realize it's as I refer to it, as a gilded birdcage, which once you take the gilding off, it's a birdcage. Mm-hmm. So I just felt like, you know, there were times where I felt like I had all the responsibility of running the tax practice, but none of the authority to really exact change that I thought needed to take place. So you get stuck in that birdcage to kind of go along, get along, and that's just not me.
So you know, you and I are both baby boomers. I think you're a little bit older than me, but you know, we grew up in a generation, and that was, you know, you get one job, you put your nose to the grindstone, you come in early, you stay late, you know, it'll all pay off. My dad was that way. My dad worked for the same company for 35 years.
My dad too.
It started in the mailroom and you know, literally worked his way up. But you know, now I think, you know, the millennial generation and the ones after that, generation X and Z, and then kind of overlaying the whole COVID thing, people have had time to be more introspective and thinking about their, I hate this term, but their work-life balance and all that other stuff. What lesson have you learned as a baby boomer that you think is appropriate for somebody in public accounting? Because when a couple episodes ago, I talked to a guy that started off at Anderson. He was in audit and didn't want to do audits for the rest of his life. And he got into consulting. And he said, I probably wouldn't be in public accounting today had I not made that switch. And so I think there's a lot of lingering, you know, angst, frustration, whatever, of people in public accounting. You know, fewer and fewer kids are getting into it now. The turnover is pretty high in general. And it's an industry in flux. So for somebody who is 20 years younger than we are, or 30 years younger than we are, that's scary, and working, what kind of advice would you give them to think about in terms of finding their bliss, in the words of Joseph Campbell, in public accounting, or not in public accounting?
First of all, it's hard to take that journey alone. Most of us are not introspective enough to honestly you know, figure those kinds of things out. So, you know, in my case, I mentioned my wife, Teresa. You know, I think it's, if you don't have that kind of a support network, perhaps a professional coach that you can confide in and talk to, you know, somebody who's not going to have the answers, but maybe they're asking you the right questions to make you process through that, because we all have the answer. It maybe just hasn't been facilitated where we can really seize onto it. A therapist to help in that kind of a situation, because sometimes we may be all bungled up in our own heads and need kind of that help to sort of straighten things out, think clearly, think forward and all of that. But if someone, you know, if those are like turnoffs to people, like they really don't want to have somebody else involved, or maybe they think nobody else will understand where they're at, which by the way, that's, we're all in that area. Particularly if you're asking, you know, is this all there is? That's a cry for help to find out, because the answer is no, that's not all there is. There's more and there's better. You might need help to get there. But if you're not, if somebody's going to say, you know, I just can't open myself up that way, something I thought of is just as simple as getting a piece of paper and draw a line down the middle. And on the left-hand side, list out the things you love about what you're doing, what really drives you, where your passion is and all of that. And in the other column, put down the stuff that you hate, the stuff that's just driving you crazy about the situation that you're in. The real courage in this is addressing those items that you hate and mitigating them in some form or fashion. And it's, and I'll give you an example in just a second, but it's so easy to look at the things you hate and say, well, you know, that's just the nature of the beast. That's what I have to put up with. And that is not true. We have, each of us has the power to do something about it. And Bill, I'll go back to the day when I announced that I was leaving UHY and I was going up to Colorado and, you know, start our own firm up here. And I told everybody I was too young to retire and I was too old for this to be a midlife crisis. So I just thought this was the real deal that I'm going to go forward on. But it was interesting. I had at least two, there might've been three partners that came into my office that after that meeting, you know, closed the door and they all kind of said the same thing, which was basically like, gosh, I wish I could do what you're doing. And my response to every one of those individuals was, you can. And then of course you got the backtracking. Oh, but you don't understand. I can't do, I'm in.
My kids are in college. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, I don't want to name the name, but you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago when we first connected on this, we talked about someone else at a firm that we both know that kind of did the same thing. He didn't go to work for another firm I think he had enough as well. And probably, you know, it was a combination of different things, but his firm got bought out by one of the big firms and, you know, he was definitely working for the man and this wasn't fun anymore. So I get that. So the Benjamin Franklin list, right? The pluses and the minuses of, I think he is credited with having invented that. And so I think that applies to wherever you are in your career or your life, I guess, for that matter. And it's a pretty simple thing to do, but I do think it is difficult for a lot of successful driven people to admit that they don't have all the answers. And so having a sympathetic spouse or friends or coach or therapist or whatever else, I think, you know, nobody can go this alone. And, you know, I think CPAs are smart people, right? And they always think in their head in a weird way that they have to have all the answers. Yeah. And guess what? You don't. If I've learned one thing is I've gotten older is I don't have to, and I don't have to be embarrassed by it. In fact, you know,
we talk in our office that the most dangerous client that you can have is the business owner who doesn't know what they don't know. Basically the know-it-all. You can't tell them anything new that they hadn't already heard or whatever. The best client of all, and this applies to ourselves too, the best client of all who knows what they don't know. And they're seeking that kind of assistance and help and advice and all those kinds of items. Those people we can relate to really well and talk to and help them get better. But the people that don't know what they don't know, that's a sad, scary place to be in.
Well, that's funny. What you just said is kind of a lead into one of the questions I was going to ask later, but I'll ask it now. So CPAs do a great job, especially on the tax side, of advising their clients about how to do things within the company, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you're the, I don't like this term either, but the trusted advisor, and you're the shoulder many times that the client will come to and cry on or ask questions about or ask advice about. But even with having all of those skill sets, I think you and I agreed a couple of weeks ago that firms do a lousy job of doing it for themselves, of like setting in the disciplines to run a company, a firm effectively, or holding people accountable in an effective way. And I've had these conversations before with partners. I said, you know, if you heard one of your clients saying what you're telling me right now, you'd go, you know, you're a going concern, or you're, you know, you don't have a plan or whatever. Can you comment on that about the cobbler shoes?
Yeah. I mean, that's the, you know, the doctor's kids have the runny noses and the cobbler's kids have no shoes. We all put our tax returns on extension. We're great at trying to save the world, but we're not so good at trying to save ourselves. And so, yeah, I think, you know, that's where you have to kind of sit back and say, am I taking my own medicine? You know, whatever advice I'm giving to my clients, am I living up to that as well? Am I doing this for myself? And that's a real challenge. And I think, you know, in our situation with Robin as my partner, you know, we it's easier to hold each other accountable and have those conversations about, are we on the same page? Are we rowing in the same direction? Do we have the same kind of goals in mind? So, yeah.
And she is younger than you are, and by like a generation. I think you mentioned she's like 20 years younger than you are. Yeah. So, ideally, you've got the ideal situation to have an elegant transition. And that was one of the other things we wanted to talk about in terms of transformation is about your eventual exit from the firm and having Robin and others take over. So what have been some of the conversations and thought process that you can share with us?
Well, first of all, I promised Robin 5 years ago when she joined that I would never retire. Now, of course, we know that that's not totally within my power either. As a little bit of background, as you know, Robin and I worked together for about 10 years when we were both in Houston. So really built up a special relationship, built one heck of a great team within UHY. I mean, we were just clicking on all cylinders, doing some great work. When I decided to leave and take off on this, and then she left the firm shortly thereafter, but we just sort of kind of kept in touch. So when she came on board, let's see, it's been 5.5 years ago now. We pretty much spent the first year transitioning clients, office space, hiring people in that office. So we spent, you know, the first year doing all those things. The second year, and this is where I'll give Robin all the credit, she was the one that kind of said, we've got to sit down and talk. We got to make, you know, you're a lot older than I am. And, you know, you may want to go one direction. I want to go another direction. We got to make sure we're on the same page here. And we spent a significant amount of time working through an exercise called the $1 Million Firm that basically helps you make sure you both are on the same page in terms of achieving common goals. And so we have those, you know, those goals, and we revisit those now and then to make sure we're both, are we okay? You know, is everything, you know, we're moving in the same direction. I know, Bill, my role here at the firm is going to morph over time. I have no near-term plans to actually hang it up and retire. Frankly, I'm having so much fun right now. I wouldn't want to give up this gig right now. But health, those are things that are sometimes beyond our control. So it's really compelling on me to do what I can to make sure not only Robin, but her management team are ready to take this thing well beyond what I've been able to do. And in some respects, that's my legacy. If I were to leave this firm and it cratered, what would that say about me?
Yeah.
I did a lousy job. But if this thing sustains, grows, builds after I'm gone, I can sit back and say, you know what? I helped with the foundation.
When y'all first had those conversations about the succession, was it hard for you to have that conversation? Because I tell you, I've talked to a lot of other managing partners and they get freaked out. I literally had this happen not too long ago where two of the senior partners from a firm were going to go fly someplace. And I said, don't you think it's smart for both of you to be on the same plane? And like, what do you mean? I said, God forbid, and played that out. And the partner I was talking to was like mortified, like he paused, stopped in his tracks. And I wasn't trying to be evil, but it's like, that's just a risk thing that you got to think about, because if you guys weren't around, I'm not sure what would happen to the firm. And so that idea of your mortality or your career mortality, was that a hard thing to approach when Robin and you first started talking about it?
You know, 4 years ago when we first had those conversations, yeah, it was probably a little more difficult for me. But it really came into sharp laser beam focus with the pandemic. And you made reference to it earlier. You know, the media talks about great resignation and all that stuff. Like, wait a minute. These people didn't just drop out of the workforce. You know, they're not all sitting in mom's basement playing video games. They just went someplace else. You know, they there might be some people that are still assessing things, but they basically left crappy organizations to try to find something better. I refer to it as the great reassessment. I was really surprised, particularly in 2020. I think I had about a half a dozen of our business clients that were like, you know what, Mueller, I think it's time for me to sell. And for me, this whole issue about success and succession became compelling, because you had more time to think, you were home alone. You know, you're thinking, what if I caught it? And what if I didn't make it? And so it really, for me, sharpened the focus that I've got to be intentional. I've got to get off my butt. I've got to push the ball. I've got to get this done. I got to wrestle this thing to the ground and make sure I live up to my own expectations that this firm survives way past beyond me.
That's pretty powerful. So you do eat your own dog food. You have those conversations with your clients and you actually live that. But it goes back to a couple of things, right? It's like having that support structure that you can have people to talk to. It's a certain degree of self-awareness, I think. And I love what you said about, you know, your legacy. And you're not, I know you're not doing it out of boastfulness or pride. It's just because it's the right thing to do, and you have an affiliation and a friendship with the people that you work with, and that's, you want to see them be prosperous as well.
Yeah, and you know, Bill, I think part of it too is, you know, we all talk about exiting the firm, and you know that exit's going to look different for everybody. You know, an exit might be selling the firm, an exit might be tucking in to another firm. An exit might be a succession where, like in my case, Robin and our management team take this firm over and continue to run it. So instead of just talking about exit kind of in a generic way, I think somebody in particularly in my position at my age, you need to sit there and kind of define out, what is that exit going to look like? What's the right exit for you, and what's it look like, and what is your responsibility? What's your participation, and what's your responsibility to make that exit happen? In our case, the exit looks like Robin and our management team taking over. So it's really on me to teach, empower, furnish those lessons that hopefully resonate with them and help them build their skill sets to run this firm.
Yeah. So any last pearls of wisdom?
You know, I said it kind of earlier. You know, for somebody that's either thinking through an exit, or they're 20 years younger and they're not feeling it where they are right now, and they're wondering, is that all there is? Take comfort in the fact that you're not alone. Take comfort in the fact that you're probably among the 5% who are asking themselves those kinds of questions rather than just accepting the status quo. So, you know, lean into it. Embrace that questioning. I can tell you from experience, if you do make that leap, you're going to experience some change. You're going to experience a lot of challenges, and there's going to be a lot of discomfort along the way as part of that transition. But the outcome is joy, love, and fulfillment.
Well, well said. Well, thank you so much, Paul, for agreeing to do this to begin with, being so open and articulate on this episode of Transformation Talks. you're I always loved working with you, and getting reconnected over this has been kind of a pleasant memory of the time that we had together.
Yeah, it's taken me back some years, and you gotta enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
Running a small accounting firm is like riding a roller coaster. There's some days where it's exciting and you're yelling your fool head off. I got to tell you, though, there's some days where you just want to get back to the station and get off so you can throw up. But that is the human experience. That's the range of emotions, and I wouldn't want it any other way.
Great. So we encourage everyone who's watching this to visit the Center for Accounting Transformation website at www.improvetheworld.net. Yes, www.improvetheworld.net. The Center for Accounting Transformation provides business professionals with a framework for utilizing innovations that are ready for adoption, the training and resources necessary to apply those innovations, and an opportunity to engage the talent and community needed to follow that pursuit of innovative accounting practices that drive responsible and mindful business performance. So once again, you can see all the resources that we have at www.improvetheworld.net. And if you're interested in sharing your own transformation story like Paul and others have done, use the Contact Us button on the website. And so thanks for joining us, and we'll look for you at the next episode. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. We hope you'll rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts to help other accountants find our show more easily. For more information, you can go to CPATrendlines.com.